Grizzly War.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa?
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. And the theme song means Mac Daddy is in the house, Dominic Carter. Boy, this makes the trifecta.
Good afternoon.
Yesterday was the Daily Double. You started Monday, Tuesday. You're here on Wednesday. And there's so many issues that hit your sweet spot.
But you know what I want to say, right?
Yes.
Once you go black,
you never go back?
You never go back.
Well, that's true for me. I never went back. I never went back. Oh, no. Not going that route.
Hey, we did a segment yesterday on comfort animals on the airlines.
Sure.
And I just feel like saying, roof, roof, roof. You know why?
Why?
I feel better than the police dogs that were bitten by fans. Where did this happen now?
That was New Hampshire, New England Patriot, degenerate, cheating fan. We're going to get into that momentarily.
Later. But bit the police dog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, bit the police dog. But that's typical of a New England Patriot fan.
Wait, so instead of the dog doing the biting, the fan bit the dog.
Oh, no. The dog got a good piece of this gavone afterwards. But then there was a number of Philadelphia Eagle degenerate fans who were punching out police horses outside of Eagle Stadium.
Wait, one more time. Say that again. I don't think I heard you.
There were a number of Philadelphia Eagle fans who were knocking out police horses out in the parking lot outside of Eagle Stadium as the cops were trying to clear the rowdy crowd.
So wait a minute. I need to make sure I got this right here. So you're telling, because you know I just left Pococo's trial this morning, and so I did you just tell me that football fans punched a police horse?
Not just one. Multiple Philadelphia Eagle fans who are as criminal as the thugs who play on the Eagles team on the gridiron. You know, because you're going to have a Super Bowl now in 2 weeks of the criminals, the Philadelphia Eagles and their criminal fans, and the cheaters, you know, the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick of the New England Patriots. But we're going to get to that momentarily because there was a double disgrazia and a shanda that was committed here in New York City that I can't quite figure out. But I need to tell you. By the way, the phone was ringing yesterday at approximately about, I'd say it was 4:15. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the midst of doing show prep for the 5 o'clock hour and also meeting with Glenn Tassinelli, our vice president of advertising for our Cumulus stations.
That was the guy that was in your office?
Well, he had come to fetch me.
Okay.
And we were discussing a brand new sponsor for this show, Sunrise Chevrolet, which is on 69th Road off of Queens Boulevard, and the phone rang.
And who was on the phone?
And it rang.
And who was on the phone?
And it rang.
But who was on the phone?
And it rang. I'm waiting for the phone to ring. I mean, you know, I make these requests. You would think we already have them queued up. You know, it's like they're ready. No. They act like they're researching through the Encyclopedia Britannica at the 5th Avenue, 42nd Street Central Library in New York City. But we'll eventually get there. In fact, forget the phone, because we'll be here a month of Sundays waiting for a soundbite of a phone ringing. You would think it's a simple soundbite, right? We had the horse, we had the dog, but we can't even get a freaking phone. So anyway, it's about 4:15, 4:30, and the phone rings. And it's the IRS, Internal Revenue Service. It's the agent who has been assigned to me, who puts the shiv in me all the time, sticks me in the neck, and wants more and more scattered to pay off a debt that I owe the IRS.
Okay, listen, I know you're a little off, Mr. Sliwa, but I don't think we should be discussing the IRS. I've been audited once, thank God, once in 30 years. But let's just say...
Are you using the Trump excuse that because there's an audit and maybe still prevailing over you, Dominic Carter, we're not privy to getting your... tax returns?
No, that doesn't work for the brothers. No, 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 no. No, I think I'd get locked up if I even said something
like
that.
Oh, no, it does work for one brother, and that's what I'm going to zone in on.
Oh, here we go.
You're very dear, Kumbaya
Cheech.
Here
we go. 3, 2, 1.
Al Slim Shady Sharpton of the National Action Hate Network. So I'm on with the IRS agent who was assigned to my case, and he goes, you're a dollar short a day late to what you agreed to pay off, because I owe a lot of dough. And I said, now, let me get this straight. If the government had been shut down, if the schmuck, the putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer hadn't folded like a cheap camera on the wall and Trump took the victory lap, you wouldn't have been at your work today. You'd have been at home, maxing and relaxing, drinking beer, watching TV.
Furloughed.
Right. Would have been furloughed.
But I can almost predict what this agent said to you. Even though we're talking about the IRS.
They have no
even
sense.
Though I don't want to talk about the IRS.
Got to.
Because it's a no-win situation.
Got to.
I will end up in your category.
Let me tell you something.
But wait a minute. But what the agent probably referred to you, said to you, was what does that got to do with your tax liability and
no.
what you owe the government?
No. Because he had no sense of humor like all the IRS agents. You know, they're like Sergeant Joe Friday. I'm just making the call, because if you don't send in a certified check,
certified.
Not just a check.
Not a money order.
Certified check.
Certified.
Because we don't want it bouncing. Going to have to come garnish your wage. And remember, garnishing the wage is not that little green leafy vegetable that is next to your steak at a five-star top shelf restaurant.
Right.
They come in and through human resources.
You don't want that.
They take a chunk of your money.
Because you know what that means. That means your phone is going to ring. And on the other end will be an embarrassed human resources person here at WABC. And they will explain that the federal government is going to get theirs before you get a dime of your paycheck.
So naturally, in typical Sliwa form, I stuck the shiv back into him. I stuck
really?
Him right in the neck. I said, I understand, according to the old gray lady, the New York Times, that you guys at the IRS paid private companies $20 million to collect $6.7 million from tax scofflaws like myself. You paid $20
million
to collect $6.7 million.
Wait, I've known you 30 years.
Yes.
Let me give you a little bit of help.
Mm.
Don't refer to yourself as a scofflaw.
Well, I am. I owe money. It's like, look, if I owe money.
Why would you admit this?
Excuse me. If you lent me money.
Right.
And I was late in my payments.
Right.
You would be under your breath saying, that deadbeat. You know, that
I would never say that about
you. Yeah, but the point is you'd be thinking it like, where's my money? You know, I need my money. Or I'll charge you a VIG. You know, street points, the way the mob does. But the point is, I'm trying to make a conversation with this guy. He's impervious to this. And I'm saying, wasn't Trump going to change the head of the IRS because they had audited conservative nonprofit 501c3 organizations?
And this is a conversation you're having with an IRS agent,
yeah.
collection agent, that's calling to say, where's our money?
Yeah,
before we lock down your checking
account. I'm busting his stones. And so I said, you know, to myself, this is what Trump was supposed to change, the director of the IRS. He's never done it because obviously he made a deal with the director of the IRS. I'm going to say I continue to be under audit. You make sure none of my tax accounts are leaked.
Well, I believe the IRS in the president's case, they have established a safe that I believe is in the commissioner or director's office that no one else has access to, where they keep solely for the purpose the president's tax
returns.
Yeah,
but you know anything can be leaked. But if the director of the IRS has made a deal with the president that nobody will ever leak his tax filings, then obviously it could be in a locked box, as you say. But then I brought up, I said, hey, I understand you're going after the Situation Man, you know, from the Jersey Shore for like $9 million. And he's negotiated a deal and he's going out, he's partying. You see him at all these trendy nightclubs. I say, man, you're basically letting this guy walk the red carpet at all these award shows. And then remember they went after Fat Joe, that degenerate hip-hop monster from the South Bronx. He didn't pay any taxes. Then there was your favorite. Remember Lauryn Hill from New Jersey, the Haitian singer from, what, the Fugees or the Fugees, whatever? She decided she wasn't going to pay taxes.
But she did pay.
Yeah, but only after they dragged her into federal court and said, hey, you're going to be doing some serious federal time.
Well, is that what you want? Do you want the feds to pull? Because you know they will. You want the feds? Don't look at me like that. Do you want the feds to pull you into federal court?
No, but I want to find out, as I said to the agent before I introduced him to Mr. Click. How is it?
Please tell me you didn't hang up on the IRS.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, I do that all the time.
What is wrong with you?
All they care about is their check. That's it. They don't care how you treat them.
Okay, so the moment you hung up on that agent,
yes.
What do you think he or she did in the computer?
Nothing. Because they have it already in the computer.
Okay.
When they're calling you, they already have the lockdown date. If you don't get that certified check in, you're DOA, dead on arrival. But I said to him, like I've said before to him, and why is it that Al Slim Shady Sharpton, deadbeat, slacker, never pays his bills.
Did you really say this?
Yeah. Owes $4 million to the IRS. Remember, he didn't pay payroll taxes for his employees.
Okay.
For that, you go right to jail. J-A-I-L.
You know what this is right now, right? This is that 45 record that you play every time I'm
on.
It's called Dominic, why doesn't your friend Al Sharpton pay taxes?
Yeah.
And then you work up our listeners.
State
and then,
taxes.
And then they're going to call
taxes.
Up. Okay, but the difference from what we know publicly between yourself and Sharpton, Reverend Sharpton, it's payroll taxes for his organization, and he entered into a payment plan with the IRS in which he is apparently making the payments.
I want to see that.
Oh, so you think he has an obligation, a responsibility to show his arch enemy, Curtis Sliwa, he has an obligation to show you that.
I get it in the neck. The IRS gets a monthly fee from me. I want to see what he's paying. I'll be more than happy to share that information with him. The fact is, when you don't pay payroll taxes, people go to jail for that. Because that's not his money.
I got you. The 45 is on.
Right. Now.
Wait.
Yeah.
But just let's deal with the real issue right here.
Sure.
What is at the heart of you and Sharpton hating each other?
Because the guy, his complexion is his protection.
Wait, I don't get it. His complexion is his protection.
We're going to be talking about the Empire State Building up next. How they decided to bathe the building top in green in honor of the criminals, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Cheetahs, the New England Patriots, the Brady Bunch, and Coach Belichick. And would not do so when it was the 100th birthday, or would have been, if she was still alive, of Mother Teresa, because she was pro-life. Now, you figure that out. Who the hell is an Eagles fan or a New England Patriots fan here in New York? We hate them. If you're a Giants fan, you hate the Eagles. If you're a Jets fan, you hate the New England Patriots. You don't have to be a Jets fan. Everybody hates the New England Patriots, the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick, because they always cheat their way to victory. And you say, what the hell is the Empire State Building bathing the top of the building in green and blue and white, the colors of the Cheetahs and the criminals who are going to play in the Super Bowl in Minneapolis in 2 weeks?
We can deal with the lights at the Empire State Building, but are you willing to acknowledge, are you willing to concede that Tom Brady is a good-looking brother? Are you willing to concede that?
No, he's not a brother. He is as Caucasian as you could be.
But he's cool. You know, he's down with the brothers, and he's leading the brothers on the team, and he's got an arm.
Most of his receivers are mighty whiteys themselves. Have you ever noticed how New England Patriots have an incredible, inordinate number of white receivers than other pro football teams? Now, they've earned it.
But
it's merit.
But let's face it, them boys can ball.
Oh, yeah.
They're basically like, what do you call them, dance arenas?
Yes.
That touchdown that he caught in the end zone and got that second foot down?
Yes.
But I do agree with you that it's not wise, even though they are an international symbol, the Empire State Building, to fly the colors of the Eagles and of the Patriots.
And then to deny Mother Teresa on what would have been her 100th birthday, because they said she's pro-life. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to comment on that, because that's a double disgrazia and a double shanda. And when we return, I want to tell you a story about Yo Kumbada Cheech, the deadbeat, the slacker, Al Slim Shady Sharpton, when he rented offices at this same Empire State Building. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Get past the people, get past the hitmen.
A double Udis Grazia, a double Shanda was committed by the Empire State Building in the fact that they bathed the top tower in the colors of the Philadelphia Criminal Eagles and the New England cheating Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick Patriots.
But most people driving by nighttime probably don't know what's the reason why the lights are on in that, in those colors.
I understand. But then again, back in 2010, what would have been the 100th birthday of Mother Teresa, no more pious person who ever lived. And they refused to bathe the tower in the colors of Mother Teresa and her order because they said she was pro-life. But let's put that aside, because I got a little story to tell you about your homie, Al Slim Shady Sharpton, and the Empire State Building.
So wait a minute. So de Blasio is my homie and Sharpton is my homie. Is there anyone else, just so that I know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bobby Menendez. How could you forget him? You know, whenever you would queue up with the other members of the Fourth Estate, he'd always be looking for you first and foremost.
Are you going to put Pococo on that list as well?
Oh, of course. He talked to you, right? We're going to talk about that later.
Yes.
You were the only reporter that he actually talked to. And it figures. You know, you're the House reporter. Let me make sure I choose the right words. But anyway, so here's Al Slim Shady Sharpton. This is before 9/11, the attack.
I'm not going to say what is wrong with you,
but
we're going to keep moving.
This also brings into play Trump and Leona Helmsley. Remember, only little people pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Trump says, you know, I always won. I was always the best in business. You know, I would always figure out a way to beat my competition. Well, he was co-owner. I don't think a lot of people know this. He was co-owner of the Empire State Building along with Leona and her husband. What was his first name? Harry?
Harry.
Right. Who at that time was like really suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's. So she was the shot caller. And they got involved in a very contentious relationship, both Trump and Leona Helmsley, over who was going to own the Empire State Building lock, stock, and barrel. Leona Helmsley won in a contested court case. Trump lost. Trump's idea was if he won, he was going to call it the Trump Empire State Building, like all of his properties. But while they were battling, guess who sought space for the National Action Hate Network in the Empire State Building? Your pal, Al Slim Shady Sharpton. Now, the reason he was able to get it is Leona Helmsley was no fan of his. You know, with her, everything was pay the money. I want... You know, it's like Tom Cruise, remember, in the movie, show me the money.
I think 99.9% of landlords are exactly that way.
Yeah, but,
show me the money.
But Leona, more so. Trump, though, remember, had a relationship with Sharpton and Don King. It's great to be an American.
Most people don't know they were boys at one point.
Oh, man, all three of them, the three amigos.
Hangout boys, business boys, and they were making millions together.
Yeah, and they learned how to stiff their vendors and not pay taxes. They shared that information. So here's Sharpton, goes to Trump, says, hey, I'd like space there. Trump says, no problem, leave it to me. I'm part owner. So negotiates a deal. Sharpton gets space. Naturally, he doesn't pay the bills. He keeps forestalling.
Wait, why do you say, we've got news headlines, but why do you say naturally Sharpton didn't pay the bills?
Because he doesn't pay his bills. You know, he's a deadbeat, slacker. But anyway, 9/11 hits, the attack of the World Trade Center. So Sharpton is going to tenant landlord court, and he's arguing now that because of the attack of the World Trade Center, the Empire State Building is target number one for the terrorists, which it always was, you know, but after the World Trade Center. And he says, I can't get any of my employees to show up to work because they're terrified that the Empire State Building is going to be hit. This was his ruse. And the judge looked at him and said, why don't we take a lunch break? And when you come back, why don't you whip up another story? Because that one don't fly. And then eventually he was evicted from the Empire State Building, went uptown, as you know, claimed that all of his receipts ended up, boom, magically burning up because of lightning, electricity, what we used to call when we were kids, Jewish lightning, Jewish electricity.
Don't we have news headlines?
Yes, we do, but I just want to explain the story. And you know what I'm talking about. And again, the IRS wanted those receipts, and mysteriously, they went up in smoke.
Things happen.
Yeah, yeah. And then he was crying outside. He had the big boots on and a picture of Adam Clayton Powell, you know, his hero. Oh, I felt the pain.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
As we continue, Dominic Carter in the house. The double Dutch bus was outside of the Patterson housing projects in the South Bronx where you grew up, right when that cold snap hit, you know, that Arctic air that made it feel like it was 20 degrees below zero. The residents of the Patterson housing projects and other NYCHA projects were without heat and hot water, and some continue to be without heat and hot water.
So just imagine if a landlord, let's say where I've always wanted to live, right, on Park Avenue,
sure,
since a little boy.
Park Avenue in the Bronx, Park Avenue
no,
in Brooklyn.
No, when I say Park Avenue, we know there's only one Park Avenue.
No, for me there's three.
Okay, okay.
The ones that count to me are in Brooklyn and the Bronx.
Okay, you're a little different.
Okay.
But for most of us,
yeah,
the only Park Avenue that counts is anywhere from 96 and Park, maybe a little more south, and down to all the way down. To all the way down. But anyway, so just imagine a landlord on Park Avenue said, "Hey, we don't have any heat, but I got a bus outside where you can stay warm during the day."
Well, in fact, that's what I found out. Camilla Price, who had run against Ruben Diaz Jr. to become Bronx Borough President this last time around and is versed on NYCHA issues, sent me a flyer that I shared with you that NYCHA officials posted in the hallways of the Patterson projects, the ones they used to run through. And it was saying, hey, if you got no heat, hot water, we got a warming bus downstairs. So, you know, the residents are figuring it's like one of those casino buses, you know, with all the amenities, toilet bar, the whole nine yards. No, it was a yellow school bus. They kept the heat on, which meant they had to belch out the smoke. You know, the very mayor who is suing big oil companies, you know, because of them burning fossil fuel, had no problem doing that with no amenities. So if you had to use the toilet, what did you do? You know, you had a problem. So the residents felt like, how low budget was that? Do you know they continue there and in other NYCHA projects not to have heat, not water? And then the other day while at Channel 5, because, you know, I do Good Day Early Call New York Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. They're like 4:45 in the morning to 5.
But I like you on the Wednesday New York One segment.
Oh, yeah. That's tonight with Hirsch and Barrero that I debate the issues of the week. And I wear all my garb. You know,
yes.
I come in very campy.
Yes.
And you know I'm going to be going off on Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo tonight. I call him Little Cicero now. But anyway, the point being is I'm there. And right before my segment, who do you think is up on the big screen?
Several thousand residents here in the Patterson houses have been suffering in the cold for nearly a month. NYCHA finally got the heat turned back on, but with dilapidated boilers like these, they're wondering just how long it will last.
There are 25 buildings and 1,700 apartments in the Patterson houses, and residents tell me they've been mostly without heat or hot water since before Christmas. That includes Danielle Jones and her baby son, Caden, who just turned 3 months old. She tells me she just brought him home from 4 days in the hospital for pneumonia.
To find out, I overdressed him or underdressed him because it was freezing temperatures in the house and winds up in the hospital with pneumonia. And something was wrong with his kidneys.
Since 2011, we have no boilers. We've been promised that we will be getting boilers. It hasn't happened yet. This is 2018.
Now, Curtis, I'm serious right now. Do me a favor. Don't go there on this topic, because I sense you're already going there.
I just asked you, did you recognize the voice?
Of course I know who it is. Please don't go there today. She is a friend of mine.
Oh, Lisa Evers, a.k.a. Yes. The former Lisa Sliwa, who used to sit in your very seat there from 1991 to 1994 when we co-hosted the morning show here, Angels in the Morning, and then we got booted to the curb by management.
Lisa is a beautiful woman, a beautiful person. Let's not go there. Let's talk about the issue.
We don't need to discuss you and Lisa. You preemptively assumed that I was going to diss and dismiss her like I do all my exes. There is a time and a place for that.
That is your former wife.
Yeah, but this happens to be and was a great piece that she put together because she went into the heart of the Patterson Housing Project. She spoke to the people, most of whom, and again, there are a lot of stunads out there who don't realize most of the NYCHA residents pay rent, some form of rent.
Some pay a lot of rent.
Yeah, total of $1 billion a year for all the projects. Some pay as high as $1,800 a month in rent for a NYCHA project.
But here's why I don't want to go there with Lisa.
We're not going there.
Okay, good. In 30 years, when I've been around her, we talk about everything. She has not brought your name up once in 30 years.
So, damn right.
So this is persona non grata. This is a topic.
Because she'll set it off if she brings my name up. But anyway, we're not talking about Lisa. You're obsessed with Lisa Evers.
No, I just don't want to talk about the women in your life.
I want to talk about Shola Olatoye or whatever the hell her name is.
She should have been fired, as I said on this show months ago.
Right, she is.
I don't know what it is with de Blasio and these African-American women where he feels a connection. I mean, I know his wife is an African-American. Charlene, the first lady, she's a beautiful person, a beautiful woman. But this lady at the Housing Authority, this is Laura Blackburn all over again. Remember the couch in her office that cost several thousand dollars as chair of the Housing Authority, and Dinkins had to finally let her go?
Yep.
Pick up the playbook, de Blasio. She has to go.
No.
The media is not going to stop. The media is going to find out something very damaging on this woman.
Let this woman go. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. From lead chip poisoning from the paint to ceilings falling down on residents to leaks in which people, when they go to the toilet, I've actually seen this. They have to have an umbrella over their head when they're copping a squat on their porcelain palace.
And lying under oath to the city council.
Doesn't matter.
About inspections.
Dominic Carter, doesn't matter to this mayor. This is what he said just yesterday after he sacked the number two guy, the leprechaun, the Irish guy, Michael Kelly, claiming he was responsible as the general manager, not the queen, not the chiefess of NYCHA. Her name again, let me see if I get it right, Shola Olatoye.
Shola took office, the Housing Authority was literally teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. She righted the ship. I want to give her a lot of credit. And look, I think it would have been a different situation if what was being done in the previous administration had complied with the law. That's where the problem started, as you know. I wish we had caught it a lot sooner. I'm very clear about that. I think we have our share of missteps. But when you put that mistake, which predates us, up against the totality of what she's achieved, I continue to have great faith in her.
And he's been relentless in supporting her, even though she is a proven liar. She's lied.
What he's been relentless at is constantly, and give it a break, de Blasio, every time he talks about this, he goes, yes, 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 we've had our share of problems, but here, Bloomberg, let me throw this to you. Let me blame you and Rudy and everybody else that came, and Dinkins, everybody else that came before me with the Housing Authority. Listen, Mr. Mayor, your patronage hire, I don't know if she was your affirmative action hire, and I'm saying this is a black man. She's got to go. She is inferior, and she cannot do the job.
Dominic,
period.
Could it be that she has compromising pictures of Mayor de Blasio?
No, I know what it is.
South of the border in Ensenada, where he was doing the Superman routine with donkeys.
No, you know what? I've never heard
Burrows,
those types of allegations
donkeys
against de Blasio, so I've never heard of him And you know we hear everything. I've never heard about him cheating on his wife. He's in a happy marriage as far as I know. But what I do know is anyone that will lie and cover for de Blasio publicly, he's got your back.
But remember, he's in Washington.
And he hates us, the media. So anything that we say, he's going to go counteractive to because he hates us
now,
in ways that you can't begin to imagine.
He is in Washington, D.C., with some of his fellow mayors today sitting down with President Donald Trump.
That's a good thing.
Trying to get money for capital improvements, especially for the Hudson Tunnel that Trump has gone thumbs down on. Because remember, originally, Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, and Cuomo agreed that they would pay a quarter apiece and the feds would pay half of the expense because we desperately need the tunnel. I mean, it's fallen apart downstairs in Penn Station. All the repairs in the world, it's like Humpty Dumpty. You're not going to put it all back together again. So they're begging. Now, you know Trump. He's going to be looking at this wide array of mayors, some of whom are hosts of sanctuary cities, who have called him all kinds of names. You know, so we're part of the resistance. Out with Trump. And you think he's going to give Bill de Blasio any play today?
No. No, not at all.
And you would think if he's going to D.C., he would meet with Dr. Ben Carson, who is the head of HUD, who controls 90% of the money that's spent for our NYCHA projects.
Well, maybe de Blasio is there today because he's starting to get ready. He's going to measure the drapes and, you know, I mean...
Nah, he's going to get dissed and dismissed, and rightfully so. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. But she's not alone. Let me see if I get it right. Shola Olataye, the chairwoman of NYCHA. Remember, before that, it was the Commissioner of Corrections, Pont. Remember, as he was doing moose calls on his way back and forth towards Maine, missing in action. The mayor defended him, waited until he retired, and he got the full compensation package, you know, the platinum.
De Blasio's going to learn the hard way. The fourth estate, in many respects, is the permanent government.
Mm.
And the hard hits against the chair of the Housing Authority are not going to stop. They're just getting started. And it will escalate to following her home with a camera, all types of things. It's not going to stop until she goes and until you deliver better services to the housing projects in New York City. But, you know, I wanted to say to you, growing up in part in the Patterson Projects, the Throgs Neck Houses,
yes.
I guess the city's point of view is if you have to go to the bathroom or if you want to get off this bus since you don't have any heat in your apartment, hey, you can always go right across the street to Lincoln Hospital and hang out there.
You're right.
You can go hang out in Lincoln.
1-800.
You might die, but you can go hang out in Lincoln.
848.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin that to begin. It must be like Putin that not giving. It must be like Putin lives just one way. It must be like Putin no longer on the way.
6 minutes after the hour of one. Top 40 with two bullets to the back of your head if you don't get up and dance in Mother Russia. This a tune in tribute to the dictator, despot, Vladimir Putin, who, by the way, is running for election again.
Mm.
And like the leader, General Zazi in Egypt, is clearing his path to victory by making sure nobody else can run. These are real great people, right? They believe in democracy.
The leading contender was disqualified. And what often happens in Russia, as you well know.
Yes.
Oops, he fell out the window.
Yeah. And in Egypt, too. It happened exactly there in Egypt, two
Oops.
Weeks before the election.
Oops.
The main challenger.
Hey, he just fell out the window.
He's not qualified. But anyway, let's put that aside as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. And boy, this investigation by Mueller and his aide-de-camps is moving fast and furiously. I had mentioned in the previous segment about bing, 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 Ricochet Rabbit.
Okay, but wait a minute. Weren't we told by the White House, by the president, that this was going to wrap up by Christmas, by end of the year?
Yeah.
and we are into January.
Yeah.
And it's only intensifying.
Oh, man, we're finding out things that as much as Washington, D.C. is a sieve and leaks, you know, both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, we didn't know that Sessions had sat for hours with Mueller and his team. And we didn't know that CIA director, former congressman of Kansas, Pompeo, we learned that today, had sat with Mueller and his team. And we hadn't heard that one of the campaign staff members who was brought on by Manafort when he became the campaign manager for Team Trump, a guy named Gates, is preparing to flip the script and cop a plea. So that means Lieutenant General Flynn has copped a plea. The coffee boy, Papadopoulos, has copped a plea. Gates is going to cop a plea. And next up to sit with Mueller is going to be the infamous Bannon. And they want to know about Flynn and Comey in terms of obstruction of justice by the president involving both cases. Boy, you got to catch your breath.
Okay, but wait now. I'm going to give you the response. Pretty soon we're going to be taking telephone calls.
Right, but I don't want to hear your response first. I want to hear the response of the president who was asked exactly that.
Because you know I'll support our listeners. Some of them are going to say, but wait a minute, Hillary, Hillary, Hillary.
No, now
let's hear about the president.
But the president did respond to the fact that Sessions, our attorney general, had sat for hours with Mueller and his team.
No, I'm not at all concerned.
Did you talk to him about it?
No, I didn't, but I'm not at all concerned.
And then, naturally, the story we're also going to cover in this half hour is the missing 50,000 texts between the FBI agents, the main ones being the ones who were having the urge to merge, snacking on one another, the lead investigator, the male, and his assistant, the female. 50,000 text messages, poof, disappear. And then we find out that the deputy director who's running the department as Ray, who actually was suggested by Chris Christie to be the next FBI director. He was one of the defense counsels that Christie had during his Bridgegate case. That Ray may have actually threatened to have resigned as the brand new FBI director because of the way Trump was questioning McCabe, the deputy director, and apparently asked McCabe who he had voted for. And I'm saying to myself, nah, you didn't. You didn't, Trump. In fact, the head of the RNC actually responded to that about this allegation that Ray, the new FBI director, threatened to resign because of the way the president had questioned McCabe, the deputy director, who's really running the show right now.
Yeah, I know this is a big story. I think it's just a conversation. I don't think it intends, all these terrible things that people are trying to put forward.
But was it inappropriate?
I don't know. I ask people who they vote for sometimes. I think it's just trying to get to know somebody. I don't think it's the intentions are as bad as they're being put out.
Dumb. That was dumb. But to me, that's not the main thing. The main thing about the FBI is that you have 50,000 texts. Now, we depend on the FBI. You know, whenever a terrorist is caught in our country, and then all of a sudden Apple doesn't want to break the code so we can find out what's in the terrorist's phone. No, we can't do that. The FBI takes it to Quantico, Virginia.
Right.
And with their hackers, they eventually hack into it without the cooperation of Silicon Valley.
Eventually, yes.
Now, 50,000 texts are missing. In fact, let's listen to our own Mark Levin last night from 6 to 9, Monday through Fridays, commenting on that.
Mueller doesn't care that tens of thousands of text messages are missing. And how they know it's 50,000, I don't know. How do you know it's not 100,000 or 47,000? Mueller doesn't care that his former chief investigator, the head of counterintelligence at the FBI, had it out for Donald Trump when he instigated this so-called collusion investigation. Mueller doesn't care at all. This is what I mean and have meant by a silent coup.
I would have said to Mark Levin, if I could have last night, I would have said, Mark, it's not the privy of Mueller. He's a special prosecutor on the Trump case, collusion with the Russians. Okay, he's certainly gone beyond that. But I have no problem assigning a new special prosecutor to specifically investigate the FBI, the DOJ, and what was going on? Were they in collusion with Barack Obama, his administration, and the Clintons to make life miserable for Donald Trump on the campaign trail and to deny him the presidency?
Okay. Now, wait a minute. I've sat patiently and listened to this.
Where are those 50,000 texts?
So 50,000 text messages are missing, right?
That's a hell of a lot.
They're missing, right? Now, we all know 1 + 1 = 2. They're missing for a reason.
Yeah, the FBI lost.
Because there's some incriminating information
right.
that these two engaged in, these lovers with the FBI.
Well, maybe more than just those two.
Okay, maybe more than just those two. But here's my point. We're talking about possible quiet societies and the FBI, silent organizations and so on. Who is the real victim here? Days before the election, Donald Trump would not have been elected dog catcher until Comey, as the head of the FBI, goes, oops, issues the letter, we're reopening the investigation into emails, and that single letter cost Hillary Clinton the presidency of the United States.
And you think it was because he alluded to the fact that it was Anthony the Weiner Wiener
who had all the emails. I think Comey was trying to play it safe. He was trying to play it both ways. He was trying to keep his job no matter who won the election. And so I don't know if he felt the momentum. He was under tremendous pressure.
Okay.
But we're talking like President Trump is the victim of the FBI. The FBI cost Hillary Clinton the election. So who's the real victim here?
I'm asking where the 50,000 texts. And if the FBI can't answer that when
okay.
they're always cracking
okay.
into people's cell phones, you know, which blocked that, and they're able to extract the texts, how come they can't find texts that their own agents were sending to one another?
But what happened to the FBI does not comment on investigations because the FBI does not want to be political. We're forgetting the knife in the back that the FBI put in Hillary Clinton's back. Now, she wasn't the best candidate. As a matter of fact, she did some things that was downright stupid. How do you avoid Wisconsin and other places and you're measuring the drapes at the White House and you're running against a guy that's the nonstop battery and he's resonating and connecting with the American people in ways that hadn't been
done
before?
Let's find out from our many listeners out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, the FBI, since it was created by J. Edgar Hoover and his lover, and when he went to sit at the racetrack in Virginia with Frank Costello, head of organized crime, who fixed all the wagering that J. Edgar Hoover did with his boyfriend, fellow agent, has always been political. Where did you get this idea that the FBI has been independent and autonomous?
You're right about that. But the FBI has always consistently, in modern time, said we're not even confirming an investigation. We're not going to do that. And just days, the election is coming to a close, and you reopen the investigation into the email, that was a kiss of death to Hillary Clinton. And that's exactly what happened.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Bobby calling from Bay Ridge. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Bobby.
I got a kick out of Dominic. He's asking me who the real victim of this election was. The real victim wasn't the dope who's in the White House, or dope number two, who could have been in the White House. The real victim is you, me, and all the other people in the United States. We got to put up reading this crap, listening this crap incessantly.
Guess what,
on the
Bobby?
Radio, you
Bobby,
guys are
Bobby,
TV,
Bobby,
everywhere.
Bobby, 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 guess what? You're 1,000% correct. Now continue. Now continue.
Change the subject. You two guys, get off of this. Get off
no, no,
of
no,
real.
Bobby, Bobby. You can't. Wait a second. Hold on, Bobby. How do you get off of the fact that the attorney general, sitting attorney general, was just interviewed by Mueller? The head of the CIA was just interviewed by Mueller. And you don't think that's important?
No one said it wasn't important.
Okay, so that's been reported in the last 2 days. That's,
you guys are in a New York City area.
What the hell, then? Go listen to freaking WNYC if you don't want to hear about Trump and Clinton and Russian collusion. I'm going to stroke out because,
hey, Bobby,
because Bobby, we're not just talking New York City
down,
or New Jersey. It's just, what a
Curtis, dope. You're turning bright beet red. Calm down.
I just suggested.
Your health is not great.
I
Bobby
just
was only making a point.
That
he
we
only
had
a point.
Two special prosecutors
and
to be fair and square.
You've been saying that consistently.
I don't trust the FBI. If you go back to Watergate, remember, Nixon tried to use the CIA to usurp the FBI.
Well, wait a minute.
And what's to suggest?
If you don't trust the FBI, if you don't trust the FBI, how do you think I feel considering what they did to Dr. King?
I understand. But what makes you think that the Clintons and their machine wouldn't use the FBI to usurp the Trump campaign?
You make a legitimate point. Perhaps the Attorney General of the United States at the time, Loretta Lynch,
oh my God.
Just happened to be here with Bill Clinton.
And
we just happened to have a convenient conversation.
What a lie
you make a legitimate point.
Okay, so why not have...
But don't tell me that President Trump is the victim of the FBI.
No, I'm saying we have allegations being made by both sides. Very credible to me. I'd like it to be vetted out by a special prosecutor. Got Mueller on one hand. Get a prosecutor and his staff. I don't care how many millions it costs. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty of both allegations because the country is divided on this. We deserve answers. When you tell me the FBI loses 50,000 text messages when they're cracking codes all the time to recover it from terrorist phones and narco-terrorist phones, and they can't find the 50,000 from their own FBI phones, you know that's purposeful. Let's go to West Milford. It's Patrick. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC.
All right. First off, Dominic, are you drinking on the job right now?
No, Patrick. No.
The FBI is what lost Hillary Clinton the election?
Yes.
You got to be drunk.
No, I'm not drunk. Because if we're going to be honest about this, and I'm pretty good at judging the pulse of the American people, Trump was a sleeper candidate that connected. To be honest with you, when he came down those stairs and made that highly outrageous comment about Mexican Americans and Mexicans, I knew he was going to be a serious contender at that very point. But I am telling you, Patrick,
you said that.
And so I just want to say to you, Patrick, that I am telling you, if not for Comey and that letter reopening the investigation, Hillary Clinton would have been elected president of the United States. We would have finally had a woman president in America.
Crooked career politicians. People are sick of it. I'm sick of it. I'm not a millionaire. I'm a working class citizen. I'm sick of people like the Clintons. And everyone in America is sick of people like the Clintons telling us how to live our lives day in and day out.
Well, we see. Let's just focus on the dossier. Because a lot of the attention is on that dossier in which the British secret agent had written up the report. It was first purchased by the Republicans to knock off Trump in the primary. When they realized it was a fait accompli, he's getting the nomination in Cleveland, they gave it up. And then Hillary and Podesta said, hey, is that dossier for sale? And gave him like, what, 150 G's? And you know the rest of the story. So both sides are really at fault. The Republicans who started it, but the Democrats who really embellished it. 1-800-848-WABC. Bring in Chelsea. Sweat them all down. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Dominic Carter in the house. Let's go to Taz, who's calling from White Plains. Welcome to WABC, Taz.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Taz.
Dominic, I respectfully have to address your point that you think Comey's...
Taz, let me be clear. I don't think... I'll bet my life on it, but go ahead.
You think that the... 2 days before reopening the investigation is worse than if they had actually done an investigation and charges for the gross negligence that was demonstrated and shown her to be illegally deleting 30,000 emails. They should have been pressing charges. So that opening up the investigation again was infinitely better than had they actually done the job in the first place.
No, Taz. Politics is all about timing and perception. And the fact of the matter is, and I respect what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is, if the FBI had opened the investigation initially, as was reported, Hillary Clinton, with the help of her great husband out on the campaign trail, Bill Clinton, would have had time to recover. Comey threw a grenade at the 11th hour of the presidential race, and it cost Hillary Clinton the election. I'm not saying that she wasn't a horrible candidate, because she was, but she would have cruised to victory, and we would have never had President Trump.
As Taz mentioned, 30,000 emails of Hillary's deleted. The FBI agents deleted 50,000 texts. It's like the tit for the tat. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Why wouldn't we investigate both?
No, but you don't do that in the 11th hour of the presidential race. You don't do that.
Oh, I'm not suggesting it should have been done. All the more reason to investigate Comey. See, you got to bring them all in. Just like Mueller is sweating them down one by one. Sessions, now Pompeo, he's going to sweat down Bannon. He wants to go one-on-one with Trump. It should be a special prosecutor to sweat all of them down.
Why do you think,
Comey, Hillary?
Why do you think Hillary Clinton passed up on these key battleground states in the 11th hour?
Because she thought she was going to dance her way, you know.
She was going to dance
it's like the king and I. She was just going to dance her way into the presidency like she was entitled to it.
Now, remember, Trump won places like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Barely. Right. Barely.
So imagine if Comey's letter, refreshing and re-energizing the doubt that people had about Hillary Clinton, if he didn't do that, do you think she would not have been able to pull in more votes to toss those states, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin?
Questionable. Let's go to Wayne calling from the Bell Parkway. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Wayne?
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. I'm sitting here doing cartwheels in the car. I hope the cops don't see me.
I hope not as well.
We keep forgetting that the exoneration letter was written way before she was even interviewed. And then they interview her without any documentation, any recordings, any memos. The fix was in.
And Wayne, just to add to what you said, she wasn't put under oath.
Thank you.
Mm. Wayne, everything you just said is factually correct. What I'm talking about is the timing of what Comey did.
Right, but
Hillary
but
Clinton even refers to this in her own book.
I know, but just what Wayne said. You know the easiest way to get somebody is to put them under oath and get them on a perjury rap.
No doubt about it.
Why didn't they put her under oath? Particularly since she is always evasive. She's lied before.
Because,
we all know
that. Because she had some leverage in terms of whether or not she did an interview with them. And they decided that it was more important to sit down and do the interview
with
her.
Was that leverage called Lynch?
And it's the same leverage.
Boss of Comey?
It's the same leverage that President Trump has now when it relates to Mueller.
I say investigate them all and then let God sort out the bodies that remain. Up next, we got to discuss I Feel Like Making Love. That song is playing in my head.
What?
Well, it's about Stormy Daniels and Trump.
Oh.
There are some new revelations, although it's more about the LLC that was set up to pay her off, even though Michael Cohen, his personal attorney, said nothing happened. Then why'd you pay her off?
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Bad Company. Love this song. Dominic Carter in the house. And it's the intro to the continuing soap opera novella involving the porno princess, Stormy Daniels. Her allegations made that at one time for a full year, she had had an affair, full-blown affair, with then-citizen Donald Trump, who was the producer and star of The Apprentice on NBC. It was at a time when Melania was pregnant with Barron. Some people have said that this upcoming meeting in Switzerland, very important for world leaders as they determine how to pursue a better economy for all, especially the first world nations. Melania has all of a sudden decided she's not attending with the president.
This is not the first time we've seen possible, I'm not going to say trouble, tension. Remember on the tarmac when the president went to hold his wife's hand and she wouldn't hold his hand?
I think that's when they were visiting Israel. Remember Bibi Netanyahu?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's been some other times, stairs and glass. Now, I don't know if it has anything to do with that, but the timing of it it may well be Melania had no idea, because the allegation is that Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, who's been with him a long time, set up an LLC in Delaware, which is like the haven for shell corporations. You know, you don't have to go to the Cayman Islands or Panama. Just set it up in Delaware. And it's hush, hush, mush, mush. You know, that's why the corporations love it, the Fortune 500 corporations and their tax rate there. He sets up an LLC, according to the Wall Street Journal. So we're not talking the National Enquirer, the New York Post, a tabloid. No, no, no. He sets up an LLC, does not use Trump's name, uses a fake name to be Trump, and a fake name for the porno princess Stormy Daniels. And she gets paid $130,000 like 2 weeks before the general election against Hillary. Whereas before that, she was talking with Slate magazine and wanted to do an appearance on Good Morning America on ABC. All of a sudden, she fell off the radar screen and she wasn't returning anybody's calls. Now, Michael Cohen says that it never happened. He didn't say the LLC never happened. He said the affair never happened. And now some, particularly those who want Donald Trump impeached, by all means, they want to knock him out of the box. They want to make a federal case about this because they claim that, like John Edwards, remember when John Edwards was that, what was he spending, like $1,000 a haircut in North Carolina? He was the slip and fall lawyer there who made millions, the darling of the Democratic Party, because they thought he'd be another Bill Clinton, you know, down south.
And he was. He had the looks, and some of those haircuts were actually on his campaign aircraft.
Right, and he was sort of a moderate Democrat. That's what they were always looking for, not somebody who's too liberal, too progressive.
And having interviewed him a couple of times, believe it or not, he was pretty smart politically.
And smooth.
And very smooth.
Smooth operator. But remember, he got caught up with his gumata, the videographer. Remember Riel Hunter?
Yes.
And this is while his wife had breast cancer.
And was literally dying.
Right, very similar to the Newt Gingrich story.
Right.
And so he didn't handle that well.
No.
But when confronted by Riel Hunter, who said it's either me or your wife or I go public, John Edwards decided, since he was seeking the Democratic presidential nomination at the time, better to pay hush money, get an agreement in which she gets the money and shuts up. And I believe she had a child out of wedlock.
Yes, right? A little girl, I believe.
So remember, that went to trial, and they failed to convict the North Carolina politician, John Edwards. Although we learned a lot of how he got that money from some old biddy in San Francisco who loved him. Just loved John Edwards. Rachel Mellon of the Mellon family. Whatever John asked for, she wrote it out. Apparently, she knew it was hush money, that it was not for the campaign. But she said, do what you got to do to make it go away. Because I love you, John. I want to see you be president of the United States. So there are critics of Donald Trump who want to go the same route, even though they maybe knocking themselves out in trying to get this before a federal court federal judge.
I'm glad you said it, and I'm just going to reinforce it. Good luck with that. You have to prove that this payment was an in-kind contribution to the presidential campaign. You're never going to be able to prove that. This complaint is going absolutely nowhere. I'm not talking about the morality of the allegation as it relates to the president. And what's her name? Stormy?
Stormy Daniels.
What do you make of the name? You like the name or no? Stormy.
Nah, when you come up with a name like that, let's face it.
So what is that supposed to mean? Stormy.
You're loosey-goosey.
That means you're loosey-goosey?
You know how storms are. They always come ashore at some point, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good way.
No, you got a name, Stormy. I don't want to have anything to do with you.
This complaint is not going anywhere.
Well, yeah, but just to try to hurt Trump. Detail. If they ever release the details of this agreement, the LLC, and I believe there is an agreement because Michael Cohen will not answer affirmatively.
Of course,
there is no agreement. What are the details of this confidentiality pact that squared off Stormy from saying anything about what she said was an affair for a year?
Curtis, you're from the streets.
Yes,
I'm from the streets. Let's be real about this. Once you're already elected, right, as President Trump is, all of this stuff is going nowhere. And as you see, the president is not really talking about this. Now, you're right. People have to understand. Don't pay attention to the inflection, the way someone says something, because they're deliberately trying to mislead you as the lawyer. You're right. He did not answer the substance
right.
of the allegations. Just the inflection yes. of the way he said it
but
was to throw you,
you
off.
You said we're street guys.
Yes.
And street guys are secular. We don't really have too many religious bones in our body because we can make excuses for all kinds of abhorrent behavior, decadent, debauchery.
Are you saying you and I make excuses?
I'm saying.
And we make excuses along the line of President Trump?
A lot faster than holy rollers and evangelicals and charismatics because, you know, they're like, oh, no, you crossed the line. And yet, I want you to listen to Tony Perkins, Family Research Council, a real holy roller, as he basically comes up with an excuse for the president.
Oh, an excuse from a religious holy
adultery.
Roller.
Yeah.
So we're going to listen to that. But you haven't put two and two together yet that sometimes those are the absolute worst people when it comes to bad behavior?
Yeah, I know, but not all.
Not all.
Small.
They're
true believers. I've been confronted by them, you know, because I was guilty of adultery. And they
Who was the big reverend many years? Tammy?
Swaggart.
It was a couple of them.
I know.
It was a few of them.
Jimmy Swaggart.
Okay.
I have sinned. You remember when he did
that
in his big church there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana? Tammy Faye Baker, I think it was. Or Jimmy Baker. Jim Baker from used to be from Muskegon, Michigan, where they had the lead smelting plant. And remember, he had the affair with Jessica Hahn.
So are you telling me you and I should start a church?
No. Oh, the church of what's happening now, right? And naturally, you can invite your pal, Reverend Al Slim Shady Sharpton, to give a sermon for money.
Here we go.
But I want you to listen to Tony Perkins, because when I listen to the holy rollers, you know, in the wee hours of the morning or overnight, you know, the evangelicals on TV, man, they talk about adultery. It's like they're going to stone you, you know, like they're going to burn you at the stake.
But look, this was all before he became president and before he gained the support of evangelicals. I'm going to tell you right now, Aaron, evangelical support of the president is not unconditional. Let me be very clear about that.
Huh.
If this president were to engage in that behavior now that he was to alleged and admitted in some cases to be involved in before, that support's not going to be there.
I'm trying to figure this out.
It's called being a phony.
I know, but we have a lot of evangelicals, charismatics, men and women of faith and high morality who are true believers. And I've run across them at a lot of our WABC gatherings. Is that true that when he was Citizen Trump, if he did commit adultery, and we know he did, that's okay. But the moment he was inaugurated as our president a year ago and walked into the West Wing and assumed responsibilities of leading our nation from then President Barack Obama, who we know did not commit adultery and definitely exuded great family values in the 8 years that he was.
Wait a minute, Brother Sliwa. You know that I'm a political reporter.
Yes.
I don't make blanket statements about any politician.
No, I understand that.
And so I don't care how nice they look in public. I don't care how good they give a speech. I don't care how much they may look like a family man.
Mm.
Those are the ones that I watch the most.
I understand.
But the ones that are family
There were enough conservatives on his jockstrap that if there was anything, they would have blown it up. He was no JFK. Let's just put it that way, okay? It was like Bush 43. There were no allegations against Bush, except...
Wait. Bush 43, that's the father?
No, the son.
Oh, because I was about to say, that's not true. There, amongst political reporters, there were plenty of allegations.
Well...
Just none of us went public with it.
Why not?
And so now we're seeing
whoa.
As an old man...
Why
that,
not?
That he's... And I, as an old man, he's doing... I'm not going to go into detail.
We knew for a very long time
there were allegations.
We knew that Bush 43 was a drunk... And he was a cocaine addict, and then he dried out.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you have exposed that?
No, I'm talking about the father.
I understand the father, but there were allegations about him having an affair.
The father?
Yes.
That's old news.
Okay, but I'm saying we had two presidencies, back to back, belly to belly.
Mm-hmm.
Bush 43, his wife, his daughters. Barack Obama, his wife Michelle, his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a hint, wasn't an allegation.
That's what you say.
All right. But we've heard that about Bush 41. We certainly heard that about JFK. And we certainly have heard that about Donald Trump. But if you're an evangelical or a person of faith, could you explain this to me, how it's okay if you did it before you were president, but God forbid you did it in the West Wing or as president of the United States, it's sin, and they should cast you out like Jesus cast out the moneylenders from the temple. 1-800-848-WABC. I'd like to hear an explanation like that. 1-800-848-9222. Let's quickly go to Larry, who's calling from Woodside. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Larry?
Yeah, hello. Look, I don't understand what you're spending so much time on this. You're milking this thing, and really, the logic to me, you're supposed to be street guys. Now, to a street guy, the fact that Trump had sex 10 years ago, is that important to you?
Larry, let me ask you this. Now, be real with me right now, okay? Yeah. Let's have a connection, you and I right now.
Yeah, all right.
If the same was said about Obama, would you say be saying right now, let it go?
Yes.
All right.
Obama was banging around when Obama was in Colombia. He was banging around with all kinds of women.
He wasn't married. He was a student. Come on. He was smoking the Maui Waui Hindu Kush and doing lines of cocaine, according to his own biography.
Yeah, but what's the point? You're just looking for
the point is
the lowest common denominator.
We're talking about an agreement that was made 2 weeks before the election in an LLC in which Trump did not use his name. The bimbo Bazzuni woman did not use her name, and the lawyer who arranged it will not deny that there was an LLC and a payment. And if you don't think that's important, well, hey, then basically you'll forgive anybody. 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Lewa. The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
6 minutes after the hour two, you remember this song by the reggaeton degenerate hip-hop monster, Daddy Yankee? Remember
no.
this?
No.
How could you forget it? It became the theme song. It was culturally appropriated by John McCain and Sarah Palin.
I've heard it, but I just don't remember. Why are you looking at me like I'm supposed to definitely know who made this song?
Well, remember, because the crowd, instead of yelling like they did with Trump's campaign, lock her up, lock her up, we're yelling, drill, baby, drill, because McCain and Sarah Palin wanted offshore drilling, something that Donald Trump says he wants, although he reneged when it came to Florida, and he's reneging in other spots. But the reason we're playing that is we're high atop Madison Square Garden in the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com with Dominic Carter in the house. It's because the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, truly is already onto his national agenda, ignoring, as we had discussed earlier, NYCHA, the growing homeless issue, issues that mayors should be on top of. But a few weeks ago, exactly 2 weeks ago, he had a huge press conference with the Mameluke, the Mashad, Scott Stringer, the city controller who wants to become the next mayor over my dead body, in which they're launching lawsuits against British Petroleum, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Royal Dutch Shell, and naturally Tillerson's old company, the Secretary of State, ExxonMobil, claiming that when Superstorm Sandy came roaring through and Shamu El-Hefe Chris Christie was running up and down the Jersey Shore, remember in that fleece sweater and then embracing Obama at the end of it, which cost him dearly amongst many Republicans, that in fact all of that was not a natural phenomenon. It was based on the burning of fossil fuels and that the damage done in New York City, sizable, as you know, out Breezy Point, the Rockaways, Far Rockaway, Coney Island, Seagate, we can just go on and on, the subway systems, Lower Manhattan, was the responsibility of these five companies who continued to produce fossil fuels, whether they were gasoline, whether it was home heating fuel oil, and as a result, New York City wants every nickel, dime, and penny that they invested to the rebuilding after Superstorm Sandy to come out of the pockets of the oil companies. And when he said that, I said to myself, Dominic, I said, here's a guy every morning wakes up late. You know, while half of New York is already at work, people from out in the suburbs, leave it to Beaverland, they've been up already like 6 hours. He gets into his SUV entourage with his security provided by the NYPD, rolls strong over the Park Slope, the YMCA, to work out there, walks across the street for his croissant and his cup of coffee, rolls in to Gracie Mansion a little before 12, takes a nap. Not to suggest he's the only political ever to take a nap. JFK used to take naps halfway through the day. And then finally gets started with his day at about 1 o'clock. And I'm saying to myself, why aren't you taking the subway if you're so concerned about the burning of fossil fuels? You almost never ride the subway.
Well, as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of this mayor. But in fairness, we have to be fair. Part of the way he travels is not up to him, believe it or not. When you're the mayor of New York, sometimes you get to decide how you're going to travel. Other times you do not. I'm telling you what I know for a fact. The police that are assigned to protect the mayor of New York, and I know we're going to talk about these lawsuits, it's the intelligence division of the NYPD. Everywhere the mayor goes, they're there. They arrive in advance before a team arrives in advance. They decide, almost like the Secret Service, how the mayor travels. So I recall with Bloomberg, a couple of times I was waiting for him as a reporter outside of a 79th Street townhouse, I think off of Fifth Avenue, and he just said, I'm taking the train. And he would go take the train. But even when the mayor takes the train, the security vehicle has to travel along that train in case they have to remove the mayor immediately.
I understand. Or in case of the subway system now, that train never gets there. Like for the rest of us.
You know, I hate to admit this, but you told me that, and I didn't believe it.
Oh, this is what happened.
Until the other morning I got on the A train. I was waiting for the A train. Oh, my God. It took forever for the train to come.
This is what happened one time, one of those rare occasions, where Comrade Bill de Blasio, the part-time mayor of the dope from Park Slope, actually entered the subterranean area that we call the subway that he knows very little about. Because even when he was in the council and public advocate, he always drove his own vehicle. He hated taking the subway. He was down near Chambers Street. He decided he was going to take the A train up to a fundraiser right here at 34th Street and 8th Avenue.
Quickest way to get around.
And he was waiting for the A train, and naturally it was delayed and delayed. He didn't know what to do. You know, like, do I change? Do I switch over to the 2 train, you know, and go to 7th Avenue? And say, he had no idea what to do. He panicked after 20 minutes. He went topside. He said to that SUV that's trailing him, I'm jumping in. We got to make tracks because I'm always late. But I'm really, really, really late now. And he abandoned ship when any regular subway rider would have known at Chambers Street, oh, A train's not running, C train, the local. Okay, I tell you what, I'll switch over to the 2 train, just get off at 7th Avenue.
But, Curtis, do you really expect the mayor of New York City to know the subway system?
Huh. That would be interesting as a lead question in the next coming debate, since it's going to be an open seat. There are term limits, unlike what Bloomberg did and stole an additional 4 years through bribery, to ask all the candidates, you know, without benefit of a subway map, first, do you have a Metro card? And secondly, how would you go from here to here, here to here, here to here? That would be a great question. But anyway, let's open up our phone lines, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. You heard the news from Deborah Valentine. After talking about it for 2 days, he was going to Washington. He was going to meet with other mayors and sit down with Donald Trump because there were issues that had to be discussed. He decided all of a sudden to tweet out he wasn't going to sit down with the president today in Washington, D.C. because the Department of Justice renewed its racist assault on the immigrant community. He faked everyone out. He did it for Gacy. When we talked about the need for the Hudson River Rail Tunnel, which the Trump administration has said, hold your horses on. We're not going to be held up at gunpoint for half the course. And secondly, the capital improvements. NYCHA, 90% of the money for NYCHA comes from the feds. It doesn't come locally. You need to at least to have some kind of relationship with Trump by dissing him this way. You think you're going to get any scandal, any coin, even from the guy who grew up in New York and made his bones in New York?
Even though Schumer can be criticized for what's gone on with the shutdown lately, but I think that Democrats could borrow a page from Schumer. You're right. Mr. Trump is the president of the United States. I understand you're looking ahead to the presidential race, but you've got to deal with the current occupant of the White House.
And then, did you see what he did yesterday?
He, meaning de Blasio?
De Blasio. And naturally, again, the Maytag, the Mameluke, Scott Stringer, who wants to become the next mayor over my dead body. They're acting like Eric Schneiderman, like the attorney general of New York State. They filed lawsuits against all the big pharma companies. De Blasio claiming that they are the pusher men, that they are pushing pharmaceutical products, especially opioids, on the masses and creating junkies. And I'm saying to myself, excuse me, if I had an accident, and let's face it, I went to Lincoln Hospital. We were talking about that across from the Patterson Housing Project.
So listen, wait. Hold on. Listen, Brother Sliwa, if something happens to me right now.
Yes.
I'm not trying to disparage or attack any New York City facility. Do not take me to Lincoln Hospital.
Or Bronx, Lebanon.
No, I have my appendix removed at Bronx, Lebanon. I haven't been there lately. I know they had that shooting by a doctor about a year ago.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
Don't want to go to Jacoby. My appendix was taken out at the one on the Grand Concourse.
I understand, and you haven't been the same since.
I haven't been.
Don't go to Coney Island Hospital. Don't go to Kings County.
Your man Sharpton, when he got stabbed, he was in Coney Island
Hospital. I understand that. Don't go to Woodkill, a.k.a. Woodhull Hospital in Bushwick.
Woodkill?
Yeah, Woodkill.
The hospital I used to go to.
Because they would kill you.
Where the lines weren't long and they knew who I was, and so I didn't have to wait. The moment I arrived, they would take me in. Happened to be Beth Israel North, you know, right across the street from where you like to get arrested.
But not a city hospital.
But it's closed now.
No, it's closed down. A lot of them have closed. But the point is, if I go to a city, let's say Bellevue. That's the biggest. That's right down the block from us.
Bellevue?
Right. Bellevue. Not the psych ward, which is where you think I should be, locked up, you know, in a rubber room with a straitjacket on. But let's say I walked into the ER, right, and I had tremendous pain, like I had before. You saw me for 2 years, struggling with pain, on the ground, in a fetal position, crying in pain. The doctors in the ER, after examining me, giving me an MRI, testing my blood, would have said, not Advil, not Tylenol. You need some strong stuff. They would have prescribed me either Percocet, Vicodin, Oxys of some type. That would have been prescribed by the hospital system of the city of New York, billion-dollar enterprise that the mayor oversees. So maybe instead of suing Big Pharma and blaming them for all the junkies out there, he ought to tell all the doctors, no, from now on it's just St. Joseph baby aspirin for people who are in pain. Is he out of his mind? And what about fentanyl now? Is it Big Pharma that's pushing fentanyl into people's veins? Or is it Red China that is exporting it here and warehousing it? Warehousing it in warehouses here and then distributing it to drug dealers here who cut the heroin with it or just sell it pure fentanyl.
You can attack and criticize de Blasio all you want to. But let's keep in mind that some doctors, not those of high merit, but some doctors were the ones writing these unlimited prescriptions. So there is something to be said about big pharmaceutical companies.
Let's go to two neighborhoods in particular.
Okay, which two?
Brighton Beach.
Okay.
Russians, all those Medicaid mills. And let's go to the South Bronx. Brook Avenue and 138th, right around there.
I don't want to.
Lots of Medicaid mills there.
I don't want to.
In which the government is paying for all the script and prescriptions written up by these doctors who I wonder if they ever went to medical school. And they're making millions.
Well,
the Medicaid mills.
The government has capped the prescriptions when it comes to some of these drugs.
But
they
for
can
years,
write now.
They did Jack Diddley Squanette. You never heard Bill de Blasio speak about that. You never heard the Mameluke, the Mashad. Scott Stringer speak about that.
Okay, let's flip the script. Is there anything you can give de Blasio credit for?
Yeah. Having his son Dante get him elected mayor of the city of New York because he had that great fro. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Neil in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Neil.
Hello, how you doing? What I want to say is if they do prevail with these lawsuits, which I don't think they are going to prevail with them, what do they do with the money?
Oh, well, you know what they do with the money.
I know. I'm just, that's what I'm asking you. I wanted to put on the radio.
Well, first off, there are going to be a lot of legal expenses because this is going to take years and years, years and years of years. Wrangling. I don't think it's just Corporation Counsel that can handle this. They're going to have to farm some of this out, outsource some of this. But they'll claim that they're going to add it to the Treasury, like, remember when Schneiderman and others, the Attorney General, sued Big Tobacco. And then the states were able to divide up what the settlement eventually was with the in federal court.
Exactly. And then probably Blasio is going to put his friends there as attorneys to do these cases.
Well, let's remember, his first name escapes me, but a prominent African-American, he was the U.S. attorney, Carter, is the Corporation Counsel currently. So, but I think you're right. They do farm out a lot of these legal services because Corp Counsel can't handle it all.
But think of it. If we didn't have Big Pharma making these painkillers, I survived for 2 years on hillbilly heroin, oxycodone. Who did we see pass away over the weekend? Great entertainer for years, Tom Petty, because he was issued fentanyl patches, which I've had after the operation I recently had to get rid of my chronic Crohn's disease. And he was self-medicated. He put too many patches on. He killed himself. How do you blame that on Big Pharma? He's still entertaining, right? He's an old guy. You know, he's got hip problems. He's got ankle problems.
I hear you, but I can easily bring that on the Big Pharmaceuticals. Because they're the ones that sent years ago put this into being, meaning they send around their reps giving many years ago, giving them samples, setting. Do you think this just happened by coincidence?
Excuse me.
This has been going on for
Tom
years.
Petty, right? Tough light professional.
Right.
He's on concert tour.
Right.
He gets a prescription for the days he's going to be away from his attending doctor. X number of fentanyl patches you use a day in order to decrease the pain so you can perform.
Right, but you know there's a difference.
Tom Petty OD'd because he took too many patches.
Right.
What do you do? Blame the doctor? You blame Big Pharma?
You're proving my point. You and I both know that when you are a celebrity or a high-profile figure, you can go to several doctors and you come on, Curtis, you know that we've done this in our own care.
Well, that's what your boy Michael Jackson did.
Thank you.
And
excellent point.
And
excellent point.
Right.
Right. So because you're a celebrity, you can go to Dr. A, B, C, D, right down the line, and they'll all give you what you
want. Could they have performed without fentanyl, Prince and Tom Petty? The answer is no. Because they had had so many chronic injuries over the years. They would not have been, especially
so
Prince.
I keep asking you this.
Yes.
Explain to me, what does it feel like once you take the medication?
Well, if you have pains, like in your joints.
So it just makes the pain go away?
Yes.
Or does it make you high?
No. The pain goes away, and if you take the proper dosage, you won't be high as a kite and, you know, mumbling to yourself like a vegetable and drooling on yourself. You'll be able to function, although you clearly know that you're high. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77-WABC.
.237. Dominic Carter in the house. And right on time, because you scored the trifecta this week, having been with us Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And all those days, you started out your workday for RNN. If you get Fios One, you can check out Dominic's reports and commentary at night from 6 to 7. At the trial of the wartime consigliere, the person closest to Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, than any other man alive, Joe Pococo. And you were there in court again today, right?
Yes, it's been very interesting to watch this play out. I had an opportunity to talk to Joe last night for about a few minutes as he came out of the courthouse. But the prosecutors are not playing here. It was the first time I've ever seen something in court yesterday. A prosecutor by the name of Robert Boone walked up to Pococo, talk about dramatics, pointing in his face and saying that he corrupted Governor Cuomo's office. And so what happened today, these lawyers, as you know, and maybe you're right about lawyers, these guys fight about everything. They were fighting about courtroom seats this morning. One juror, juror number 4, had to tell Judge Caproni that her, where she works at, is the same location of Governor Cuomo's New York City office. And so not wanting to have a conflict of interest.
So there's something like 40th Street and 3rd Avenue.
It's I don't remember. It's 3rd Avenue, but your memory is good. But on
the
stand.
There's some famous fish restaurant right across the street.
That's good. That's good.
Because, you see. That's good. You see, Andrew Cuomo would suggest to Pococo. If he could speak with him like you spoke with him. Gumbari Cheech, start the cheat, or you'll be swimming with the fishes, Upesh.
All right, translate the beginning part.
Kumbari Cheech, that means you're closer to me than a blood relative.
Homeboy.
We know that.
Homeboy.
Right.
And language I got. Homeboy.
Right.
Your homeboy.
Start the cheat.
Start the cheat.
Stay quiet.
Start the cheat.
Me a feel.
Me a feel.
That's like it.
Start the cheat.
My
me
son.
A feel.
My son, my friend. And then you'll be swimming with the fishes, you know, Upesh.
I got that part.
All you got to do, and then he points to the fish restaurant across the street. But anyway, what exactly transpired in it? Now, when you say the seating, you see, what used to happen, and I equate it to organized crime trials. We discussed it yesterday in the final trial against John Gotti Sr. in the Eastern District with Judge Gleason. Excuse me, at the time, the prosecutor was Gleason. He's now the federal judge there. And there would be the celebrity pew, you know, the first pew. You saw it in the Menendez trial. There was Cory Booker there, Lindsey Graham. There used to be Mickey Rourke, John Amos, how he got there from Good Times, the black actor from Englewood, I have no idea, Anthony Quinn, you know, absorber fame, and Jimmy Kahn, who was James Kahn, who was in The Godfather and always, you know, somewhat connected. But is there a celebrity pew there in support of Joe Pococo?
No. The way it's set up, of course, there's a... there are roles for us folks of the Fourth Estate, so we have to have several roles. And the U.S. attorney, the new U.S. attorney, was in court yesterday. So they break it up.
Now, that's Rudy's boy.
That's
in
right.
In fact,
that's
the guy who replaced Preet Bharara, who was replaced by his assistant, June Kim,
right?
Who actually was part of my trial. He was part of the prosecutors in the John Gotti Jr. trial, where he was charged with kidnapping and attempting to kill me.
So wait, I got a question.
Yes.
When you were testifying for the feds,
yes.
how much time do they spend prepping you as a witness?
They had a hard time prepping me because...
I can imagine.
They were trying to say, just answer yes or no. You know, don't go into these long, winding explanations of yours.
Curtis Lee story.
Exactly. And I said, but that's not me. You know, a yes or a no answer. Say, in fact, to show you how much the U.S. attorney was not even on my side, before we went to trial in the John Gotti Jr. case, the first trial, there were four trials against him, the U.S. attorney joined the defense counsel for John Gotti Jr. and tried to put a gag order on me. So that I would not talk about it on the radio, because we were doing Morning Drive at the time. They tried to prevent me from talking about the case. Luckily, at the time, Disney owned us, never wanted to deal with talk radio, but their lawyers went to court on my behalf and guaranteed my right of free speech before Judge Shira Shinlin, who I hated, I loathed, I despised.
She's retired now, I believe.
Thank God. Friend of all mobsters, friend of terrorists, and friends of enemies of America. But she actually ruled in my favor that I would be able to speak. But in this particular case, Pococo has taken the code of omerta. He's not talking to the press, right?
Well, it's funny. He did say he's not going to talk when I spoke to him. But I felt like Judge Caproni, who did Sheldon Silver as well, I felt like she was talking directly to me in trial because she lectured the jury, do not talk to any reporters. And I mean, she went on and on and on about do not talk to the press.
She knows you. You were the one reporter in the Robert Menendez case who found that juror who had to go out on vacation. How the hell the judge allowed her to do that? You got the exclusive interview that broke that case wide open, and there was no way they were going to get a consensus after you helped your very dear Kumbari Cheech, your friend Bobby Menendez.
I helped them, huh?
Yeah, break that jury, yes.
I helped them. Well, let's just say I'm doing some of my Carter magic for this trial in Judge Caproni's courtroom.
Okay, so what transpired today? Just jostling between the lawyers?
No. You have a forensic accountant who works for the FBI, Molly Brewster, who was on the stand yesterday and still on the stand today. You understand courtrooms very well. So you have Pococo as a defendant,
right.
But you also have the three businessmen that allegedly bribed him.
Right.
So for every witness, for the most part, you have to permit the direct testimony and then the cross-examination for every single defendant, for every witness. So, for example, when lobbyist Todd Howell takes the stand, they're going to try and eat him alive. You're going to have four different cross-examinations of him.
Now, Todd Howell was a very dear friend of Andrew Cuomo and Joe Pococo.
Boy, you know all the players here, huh?
Yeah, he became a lobbyist, and then he got caught up in this, the shakedowns and extortion. He decided to opt out early and make a deal with the feds. So he's not looking at the kind of time that Pococo and those three other businessmen are looking at, or the other five who will follow with court trials that will be taking place later this year. Imagine a total of nine people affiliated with Andrew Cuomo are going on trial for corruption, and he, the anal one, claims not to have known any of this?
And remember, it could happen at any minute. Because I'm headed right back down to the courthouse the moment I leave here.
Yes.
You mentioned Cuomo. His chief of staff could be on the stand by the time I get back to the courthouse. Think about that for a second. Because I've been talking up Cuomo as a presidential candidate.
Yes.
But now I'm not so sure. His chief of staff will be a witness at a federal corruption trial, possibly within minutes.
That would be similar to if all of a sudden Mueller was grilling Rince Out Priebus, the original chief of staff of the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and his replacement, General Kelly. And let's face it, as chief of staff, you know everybody going in, going out. You hear all the conversations. You listen in on phone calls. I don't think people understand this. You listen in on phone calls in which the chief executive, in this case of New York State, Cuomo, is talking to supporters, contributors, everything, because you're trying to make sure that the governor doesn't get himself into a jam-up. That's the whole point of listening. And the other thing that I think must come out in this trial is all politicals, all government officials and their staff, they have cell phones, smartphones, iPhones.
Why do you look so happy?
Because Cuomo has decided to go Canadian. He uses the old-fashioned cell phone that was very popular at one time because Blackberries, because, you know, if you had sausage fingers like yourself, they liked that because the keyboard would come out.
Thank you very much.
But with the Blackberry, you can erase everything within like 60 days. And that's what the Cuomo administration does. So all of their communications to one another, they all use Blackberries. Within 60 days, it automatically wipes everything out. Very similar to the 50,000 texts that are missing from the FBI phones that naturally the president and his supporters are rightfully saying. And what happened to the 50,000 texts?
Let me give our listeners some free advice here.
Yes.
If you're doing anything that's questionable, do not put it in a text. That's how they nailed Pococo. In terms of the charges, Pococo did not know that Howell was cooperating with the feds.
Right.
Howell was the one that set up the alleged bribery payments. So the feds already got the guy that you're in bed with. And so that's how they got Pococo, using the term ziti to refer to bribery money. And that's one of the things the prosecutor said yesterday.
Right out of The Sopranos. Ziti. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Yeah, when I was there in Cape Town, South Africa, this song was a big hit on the radio, You Master Kayla's. Bring him back home, calling for Nelson Mandela's release from prison. And they played it for years. By then, Nelson Mandela had already been released. And remember, they didn't go to civil war. They had truth and reconciliation, where if you came forward, regardless of whose side you were on, the apartheid side, you know, the Dutch Reform side, or if you were on the ANC side, and you acknowledged your sins, as bad as they were, and did it in a public way, you were exonerated. And this reminds us of the story we did the other day about Sean Donis, remember? Following his wife, into the house in Rockland County of the guy she was having an affair with, and he was facing like 15 years for home invasion.
But wait, she wasn't just having an affair. He walked in and she was having sex.
Yes.
She was making love to her lover while her husband walked in.
Right. He claimed that it wasn't a home invasion because the door was open. You said that often is the case in Pomona, where you live in Rockland County and other parts. Well, it was not a jury trial. It was a judge. And the judge determined that he was only guilty of having a cheating wife. Exonerated on all charges. He walked out free. So husbands and wives out there, you can use that app that he used, Find My iPhone, attach it to the iPhone, so a smartphone of the one you love, or the one you're married to.
So now you want to mess up some more relationships.
Track them down, stalk them, walk through the door while they're doing the nasty, nasty and having the urge to merge, video it, share it with everyone, and you too will walk free out of court because Sean Dunn has just set a precedent for men and women out there who feel that they've been done wrong, done dirty.